You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back after a little holiday hiatus here with another edition of the M Squared TechCast. Mike, you have a good break?
I did, actually. I tried to get work done, but I lacked motivation.
So, okay.
I got a little bit done. I put out a newsletter this morning, but I was like over 10 days. I'd like, do a little here, do a little there, kind of put it in the bank, and then assembled it on Sunday, and there you go.
Yeah, well, one thing I discovered was the joys of the higher education work schedule. We had 2 weeks off, and we honest to God had 2 weeks off.
Wow.
Because all the professors that I generally work for getting out press releases and whatnot, they were all on vacation too, and they were not bothering me. So it was
perfect.
A wonderful thing.
Yeah.
We've got a great show for you here today, a good mix of guests. We're going to start things off with an in-studio guest here, someone I've been following as a journalist for a long time, Michelle Krebs of Auto Trader. Michelle, what's your title there now?
I'm actually a senior director for Cox Automotive, but I'm executive analyst for Auto Trader. Cox Automotive has Auto Trader, Kelley Blue Book.
Okay.
And Manheim Auto Auctions, which we have one in Flat Rock, Michigan, and we have a lot of software companies that all relate to the dealer business.
Well, we want to talk about that most favored industry here in the Detroit area, the car business. So let's dive in. What do you see for new vehicle sales in 2019? Particularly, I guess there's more competition than ever from good quality used cars.
Well, let me back up. So the first thing that happened, 2018 turned out to be a way better year than we anticipated. We thought sales would be down. They actually eked out a tiny increase. So that was kind of surprising. We do not think that will repeat this year. We expect car sales to be down a little bit in 2019. Still a good year. I think the problem is there's so many questions this year. Where are interest rates going? And, you know, credit is really important to the car buyer.
Well, to everyone. Yes.
And then what's going to happen with tariffs? That's another biggie that we just don't know what's
trade war, right?
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen. So we think it'll be close to 17 million. It'll be the first year in 4 years it's not hitting 17 million, but that could change. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Remember 10 years ago when it was 10 million?
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
Right. It's been a good run, so nobody can complain about where we've been in the auto industry for the past 10 years.
Well, I just shopped for a new car for my bride. My wife came off of a 3-year lease, and we wound up getting her a midsize SUV. I finally joined SUV Nation. We got her a Ford Escape, and I looked at some of the full-size pickup trucks as well, and anything that says truck or SUV or CUV on it, the prices are astounding, but the only thing is nobody's really paying the sticker price, right? How do they get around that issue?
Well, I don't know. Everybody's paying a lot higher prices. The average Kelley Blue Book puts the average price of a new vehicle at somewhere around $36,000, $37,000 now because of the heavy preponderance of 50, trucks and
50 grand up for a truck.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's that. And so, and less on the, it's quite amazing. There's hardly anything you can get for under 20,000 or even around that ballpark anymore. So that's why people that are shopping that segment go to the used car market where vehicles like what your wife turned in, it comes back on the market, and that's
still in pretty good shape.
And
we took
real
good care of it,
because
we didn't want to have to get dinged when we turned in the leased car.
So, and this year, it's going to peak year. We expect 4.2 million vehicles to be turned back in on lease.
Wow.
So that's great if you're looking for a, lightly used nearly new car, we call them.
2 or 3 year leases, typically.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is dealers make more money selling used cars than new.
A little bit more, yes, they do. So there's good incentive. We saw a lot of dealers buying up a lot of used vehicles back in the summer, thinking that maybe the tariffs would go into effect, and they wanted to at least have something that they could sell. So
The tariffs are actually, from what I'm reading, are beginning to take a bite now out of lots of folks across all across the spectrum, but including vehicles, right?
Oh, absolutely. We expect that the price of vehicles will go up even more. So already we've got aluminum and steel tariffs on, and that's costing a couple hundred, $200 to $300 more a vehicle. Well, the car companies have been absorbing that, and that can't last forever. Mm-hmm. But if we get more, tariffs on electronics of European vehicles, Japanese vehicles, you will see prices go up thousands.
Wow.
Well, then profitability. For instance, the automakers, the OEMs, a lot of the big ones make a large portion of their money, say, in the China market, and that's going to get hit hard, right?
Well, and it's already slowing down. That's why you saw the stock market go crazy last week. The China market is slowing down a lot more than expected, and General Motors and Ford are big players there. So.
Yeah.
There's also an impact of taxes this year, the Trump tax cut. Everybody got more money up front, but it looks like the refunds are going to be smaller.
And I don't think a lot of people know that.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to be talking more and more about that. Yes, we saw incredible euphoria around the tax reform early last year, and it did help businesses. If you looked at truck sales, mm-hmm. a lot of that was commercial truck sales that brought the totals up, and people had more money in their pocket. But the piper's going to be paid because we expect that fewer people will get refunds, and there'll be smaller refunds coming up. That is, if the government shut down,
the IRS,
get the refunds.
The IRS is closed.
Yes,
is that
exactly.
good or is that bad?
Yeah, I don't know.
If you want a
yeah.
refund, it's not good.
Yeah. However, if you owe, you don't care. You're not going to send that check in until April 14th anyway, right?
I guess so.
And hopefully it'll keep going so you'll get an extension. You can put it in later, right? Because if there's no one there to receive it, did you send it? Right?
Yeah.
Well, I wondered about that.
They might not cash it. You might be able to make some money on the float there or something. I don't know. Let's talk about saturation. We've already talked a little bit about crossovers and SUVs. Mm-hmm. But your belief is that market is getting pretty close to saturated, that there's not a whole lot more room for growth there?
Well, there's more room for growth, but what we expect, there are a lot of new crossovers and SUVs that are being introduced. You'll see them some next week unveiled at the Detroit Auto Show.
Can't wait.
And so the market's getting really crowded.
Mm-hmm.
So I think while there's room for sales and probably the newest products will be the winners, the profit margins aren't going to be what they were. And automakers aren't going to can't rely on those constantly higher prices for profit.
And we're hearing rumors of massive layoffs here by the end of the month, right?
Right. General Motors has announced they offered a retirement package. Not enough people took it, so we expect major layoffs by the end of the month.
Do you have a number in mind?
I have no idea. But I think they put out a number.
Thousands, right?
It's I want to say 14,000, but I can't remember exactly.
Michigan will get the brunt of that. But not all of that, right?
Right.
Okay.
I would expect that. And, we know Ford's has been offering enhanced retirements, and we would expect they'll do some layoffs too. Mm. And it depends on if the market really falls, which we don't expect, we can expect more.
So the layoffs then, if we're looking at 17 million units, I mean, almost that this year. And so what's the crunch then? Why are they laying folks off?
Well, since the Great Recession, the automakers have focused for the first time in my 40 years of covering this business on profit margins, not just volume. That's why you've seen GM get rid of some vehicles that they don't make money on. They don't care about the volumes. They care more about the profit margin. So there's mm-hmm. that. Also, the car companies, like many companies, including my own, we have to maintain our current business, but we have to start planning for a new future, a future that's mobility services, autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles. You can argue all day about how far out that is, and it may be farther out than we think. I don't know. They have to take two roads for, today's viability and then prepare for the future.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's what I was reading is that Mary Barra, for instance, is taking a longer term view than typically GM takes, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, she has been leading this charge. They want to be a leader, and they've drawn a line in the sand. They want to be a leader in autonomous vehicles and mobility services.
So where are we with electrification? I know people keep talking about electrification mm-hmm. as being the future, and you keep seeing 90 6% of the cars or something like that being internal combustion engines.
Okay, so two different things.
Yeah.
You can have electrification on an internal combustion engine,
sure,
too. You know, we have hybrids and plug-in hybrids. Electric vehicles are what everybody's looking at now. The sales of those have actually gone up some, and most of that is due to Tesla.
Yeah,
Tesla really had an impact on the market this year. They sold, you know.
Yeah, I see your background material here. They're the number one luxury car. No.
Right, right. Jeez. And, you know,
well, and they're coming out with a $35,000 midsize.
So they say.
So they say. But
might,
not
be 40,
true, huh?
Might be 40, maybe, yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, the Model 3's been, they're finally delivering Model 3's, and it was supposed to cost $35,000. I think it's a unicorn. You probably can't find one.
Okay, so it's more like 40?
Yeah, there's more.
More?
I think it could be. And then, you know.
So Matt's wife, next time she gets a Tesla, right? So.
Oh, well, you know, it is funny. We do have the automatic start-stop.
Mm-hmm.
In that, which is
it's
a form
kind of weird,
of,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's a form of mild hybrid,
right,
though, right?
It's, well, it's a way to save fuel.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that's happening is, what did you pay for gas in the last few days? I paid $1.99. I know some people paid $1.79.
Yeah, it got as low as, I think Dearborn, where I live, has about the lowest gas prices in the area. It got down to like $1.75 there, was the lowest I saw.
So that's competition for electric vehicles.
Sure.
And
is.
Of course, with General Motors and Tesla, they've run out. They're running out of the $7,500 tax credit because there was a cap of in terms of volume on those. So that could have an impact too. But there's a lot more electric vehicles coming into the market.
Really?
Yes.
We've only got about 3 minutes left. I want to skip ahead because I think big thing on the horizon are the UAW negotiations.
That's going to be huge.
And part of that already is the first shot's been fired by GM threatening to close plants. It's like, you know, come back to us with a deal. We'll take a look at it, right?
Right, right. You know, GM's serious about getting rid of cars and getting rid of some plant capacity, but it definitely is for negotiating with UAW. The contracts with Ford, GM, and Fiat Chrysler expire in September, so that always makes
Which one's going to be the pattern? Is it going to be GM?
Well, I'm not sure. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not that close to the labor talks, and I've been paying more attention to GM than Ford and Fiat Chrysler, so we'll see. I think, you know, temp workers are going to – the use of temporary workers is going to be an issue.
Well, that's certainly part of the overall economy now, you know, the whole gig economy thing.
That's right.
So I wouldn't expect the auto industry to be able to escape that.
Right.
I wanted to – you also mentioned something about recall legislation. Let's talk about that for
a second. Well, now that the Democrats have taken over the House, we are seeing some legislation possibly reemerge that would not allow – a vehicle that has an open recall on it to be sold.
Mm.
So your car, my Ford Fusion that had a recall on it and I could not technically sell, that's going to have big implications. I can't imagine that it'll get passed because of all of those implications, but that is something certainly we're and there's a lot of those open recalls. I mean, Ford just had a huge Takata airbag recall last week. And for a lot of them, there's not the airbags to replace. There's not a fix for them yet. So that's where it's very problematic.
So if it's a car there's a recall on that has not yet been repaired, then it can't be sold? That's the restriction?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well.
But if for some, there isn't a repair. Like my Ford Fusion, when I gave it to my sister, they still did not have the repair for it. So I kept telling her to check with the dealer constantly to see if there is a fix on it.
Yeah.
Only have a minute left for to let you do a shameless plug about your how folks can reach out to you, your various
and all the various products,
all
there.
The various products you have. Take it away.
Well, if you want to know more about the industry, we've established on CoxAutoInc.com. We have what's called the newsroom, and there's all kinds of data, all kinds of information about the economy as it affects the auto industry, all kinds of things like that. And then, of course, Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader have car reviews and everything you want to know about new and used cars on the market.
Great.
Okay.
And if somebody wants to reach out to you, how do they do that? We don't want to give that out. Right?
I'm easy to find.
You see your byline a lot.
You
that's
do.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much, Michelle Krebs from Cox Automotive and AutoTrader.com. Remember that website. We'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared Tech cast. For right now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And we'll be back in just a moment at PodcastDetroit.com.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
And we have with us, calling in from far-flung Lansing area, Dan Lorman, former Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Michigan, and they got swooped away by Security Mentor. How long has it been now? Two or three years, right?
Actually, it's been four now, Mike.
No,
it's,
kidding.
Happy New Year to you and also to Matt.
Hey, thank you.
You bet.
So, just like when we get Richard Steenan on, we should probably have background music. Dun, dun, dun. So, you're going to tell us all the bad things that could happen to businesses hooked up to the internet, which, of course, is every business these days. You have a column that's running on my website, and I'm not sure where the original posting was. Where did that originally post at?
Yeah, originally Government Technology Magazine. I've done it every year for the last 7 or 8 years now. I rank the top security predictions, not just by what I think, but you know what the top vendors, you know, FireEye, Trend Micro, Symantec, McAfee, and you know, really by industry company, what are the top security predictions as we head into the new year?
Well, then that sounds like a great segue. What are those?
Okay, great. Well, thanks. There's so many really great ones, and I kind of lead off. I'll talk about some of the top threats. I mean, a lot of them were familiar ones that you've seen in previous years. You know, we're going to see more ransomware, nation state attacks. The tone was not quite as doomsday-ish as in 2018 overall, but really when you start thinking about 2019, you know, the issues we have with China, the trade disputes, there's opinions if that goes south or badly somehow that there might be more attacks from Russia and China, nation-state kinds of things. Ransomware, destructive malware are all, you know, on the top of the list. And near the end, we can talk about some of the differences of opinion that are out there. There's some big ones around artificial intelligence and some topics. But let me just read through some of the vendors' top, you know, kind of one-line predictions. This Trend Micro is kind of top of the list for me. But actual mass real-world use of breach credentials will be seen. More sextortion cases. And that's an interesting one. You know,
that's a new one on me. Yeah, that caught my attention.
Yeah,
caught my
ear too as a dirty old man. So yeah, let's hear about that.
Well, it's funny on that one because there's a lot of talk about deep fakes is a big issue. Where, you know, people actually taking your people's faces and putting them on somebody else's body or whatever, and that's going to become more and more of an issue overall. So that, along with sextortion, could be a big challenge.
As long as it's the dude that plays Aquaman, I'm fine with it. So you know.
As long as you're Aquaman, exactly. Yeah. Home networks and work from home scenarios, people bringing in home equipment to in the work environment, BYOD kind of risk, bring your own devices. Innocent victims get caught in crossfire as countries grow their cyber presence. Interesting one here, 99% of exploit-based cyber attacks will not be based on zero-day vulnerabilities. And that's a mouthful, but really, you know, it highlights one of the solution areas, Mike and Matt, is the fact that, you know, a lot of people just still don't, you know, keep up with their patches and the mm-hmm. security vulnerabilities that are out there. And there's all this fear about, you know, zero-day malware that can't be stopped by the, you know, from the bad guys. But, you know, the majority of attacks still are from known vulnerabilities, some of them years and years old that are bringing down enterprises.
So, moral of the story there, when it says update and restart, update, please.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You think that would play into those companies that do software as a service? Because one of the claims that they could make is that they stay current on all their patches and that sort of thing, right?
Oh, that's right. You're absolutely right. And then it's interesting. You bring up a really good point, Mike. Some people think some of these are self-serving, if you will, predictions to get people to look more at their solutions. But I mean, a lot of these trends, a couple more here I'll list, are really ones that are themes across multiple vendors and multiple different platforms. They talk about cyber criminals competing for dominance in an IoT worm war, which is interesting. So almost reminds you of like Chicago 1930s, kind of battles. And then I like this one from Trend. It's the last one I listed. Cyber criminals will use more techniques to blend in. So, try and not be as noisy, if you will. The quote is, in response to security vendor technology, specifically renewed interest in machine learning for cybersecurity, cyber criminals will use more malicious tactics to make normal computing purposes, they call it, quote unquote, living off the land, as people do normal things, kind of piggybacking off of that. And so that's an interesting trend there. Huh. So a couple others just listening through for like FireEye. Those were all Trend Micro. More nation states developing offensive capabilities. Breaches continuing due to lack of attribution and accountability. Widening skills gap. We talked about that last year a lot. Lack of resources, especially for small and mid-sized companies. Supply chain weaknesses. Attackers eyeing the cloud anew. So there's a lot of predictions around, the cloud will be attacked much more than in 2018. And other people saying it's going to be more mobile device attacks. But, you see some of that on both sides. McAfee, I'll just do a couple for McAfee and WatchGuard. But, cyber criminals underground to consolidate, create more partnerships. So the bad guys are getting together and partnering, according to McAfee. Artificial intelligence will be used more, which was interesting because Forcepoint and a couple other vendors said there really is no artificial intelligence in cybersecurity. There's machine learning, there's big data analysis, but it's really not artificial intelligence. And then other companies like, specifically McAfee and IBM and a few others are kind of hailing their artificial intelligence. So you have, again, two differences of opinion on artificial intelligence. And that's specifically about 2019. It might be different in 2025 or 2030, but they're talking about this year. Forcepoint thinks that artificial intelligence is really overblown. It's not going to really solve our talent problems. Any feedback on those guys?
Well, I mean, we've been talking about talent forever, and I don't know how you force people into taking great jobs.
I mean, you got to have an aptitude for it, too.
Yeah,
it's a great job. You got to want to do it and be good at it.
Yeah, right? You got to want to do it and be reasonably good at it, right? Exactly. But from what I can see, based on every academic program, every training program I can see out there, anyone who wants a cybersecurity job can have three, I mean, that's just kind of how it is right now.
Well, this is not going to be a popular comment in some parties, but essentially, we open up those H-1Bs, let in all that talent like we used to do, then we could solve a lot of these talent problems because the world wants to come here and work in the United States. It's just that we're having issues right now with that on the federal level.
Yeah, that and what Governor Snyder used to say is that, all these international students we have at Michigan universities, we ought to just staple a green card to the diploma, depending on the major.
Keep them here.
Some of them that are really needed.
That's good thoughts there, guys. I agree. Let me give you a couple more real quick. This interesting AI chatbots going rogue, according to WatchGuard. That's an interesting one. Utilities and industrial control systems will be targeted with ransomware. So we may see like a major utility being held for ransomware. Interesting thought there. Nation state launches a fire sale attack. Fireless self-propagating vapor worms. And attackers hold the internet hostage. That was WatchGuard. There's really literally 19 different. That's just four companies, and there's like 19 different companies. And then I have kind of I list in the posting there, Mike. I list you know, kind of the honorable mention. But I did, I kind of gave some creative awards at the end. You know, one I thought you guys might want to comment on this from Beyond Trust. They say millennials will ruin everything. This is a prediction.
Come on.
that's what they're saying.
Now be careful now. Jessica's a millennial. She might cut you off. So
not that kind of millennial, though.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that. I don't know that. I mean, they're basically the point they're making is that millennials just share anything anyway. Oh, so there is literally no privacy. Young people don't really care. They just share stuff. And so that's what they were responding to on the privacy front. But I thought that was interesting. Hmm. Bring your own security to work. Malwarebytes says that's going to start taking off, that individual employees will kind of take matters into their own hands and bring their own security into work. Cyber criminals will compete for dominance in the emerging world of a worm. We've actually said that before, an IoT worm war. And almost everybody says we're going to have more large-scale security breaches. So, I mean, overall, I think the trend report, you know, some new things in there, but a lot of similarities from 2018. It just seems like it's going to be more of the same, and there's going to be, you know, more attacks than ever.
Well, it seems the bad guys are getting better organized than the good guys. I think it's a factor of the money, because there's so much more money to be made on the dark side of the force, right?
I agree. And I think, you know, there's more and more people getting involved in this. I think one other big trend that I'm predicting that, you know, is, you know, this, even the trend for more predictions is going to be, I think 2020, you've got more and more technology, you know, with, you know, the consumer electronics show that's out there in Las Vegas right now. You have more and more new, you know, devices in the home. You have more, Internet of Things and more technology in all areas of our lives, and cars and everything. And so there's more and more predictions coming. And I think more and more companies will get into this prediction market, literally, where you start thinking about not just 2020, you know, but you have the whole new decade coming in with the 20s decade. What will happen for the next decade? You're going to hear a lot of that this year. People are going to be positioning themselves in both technology and security as the experts, as the thought leaders, and predicting what's going to be next, you know, ultimately leads what are people going to buy, right? If this is going to be the problem, then I need to buy your device to make that, you know, protected. So I think you're going to see a lot of that in the coming year.
So we've cycled back to the roaring 20s again, huh? How about that? I wanted to let you pat yourself on the back here a little bit, because I see you made some security predictions for 2018 that turned out pretty well. Talk about that for a minute. Feel free.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I think, you know, there are actually quite a few. I mean, most people were talking about a lot of, you know, different events that we're going to get in the headlines. You know, you can basically predict the same thing for this year. If you have, you know, a Super Bowl, but, you know, in the case of the, you know, the World Cup soccer in Russia, I predicted that, you know, there was going to be disruption. There was going to be, you know, online, people were going to use that. Whenever there's a big global event coming up, whether that be March Madness in the U.S., but also, you know, certainly, and even a global event, you often see a lot of the hackers will go where the people are. So you're certainly going to see that with, you know, political events. If you've got all the world leaders getting together for a Group of Eight meeting, an economic summit, those kinds of things, they get a lot of coverage. And so I think that's another thing that happened in 2018 that I predicted, and I think a lot of them did get, you know, both viruses around the Olympics, but also around a number of different events that happened in 2018, the Winter Olympics last year.
All right, Dan, we're under a minute to go. Let's tell people how to get a hold of you for more information on the services you can provide.
Thank you very much, Matt. Appreciate it. Again, I'm Dan Lohrman with Security Mentor. Certainly go to our website, securitymentor.com. But I'm at GovCSO on Twitter, and you can get to my blog by just literally Googling Lohrman on cybersecurity. And listen, I'd love to work with people all over Michigan to help them to protect their network. So feel free to reach out and connect with me.
All right, that's Dan Lohrmann, former Chief Information Security Officer with the State of Michigan and now an independent cybersecurity contractor. Thanks for being on the show today. We'll be right back in just a moment with another segment for the of the M-Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast right here at PodcastDetroit.com. Our next guest, actually, I have a long relationship with. She was the person that I turned my stories into for 7 or 8 years at Crane's Detroit Business many, many moons ago. We won't say how many. She is Cindy Goodacre. She is now Vice President of Strategic Programs and Communications with Inforum. That's the Women's Economic Group. And she wants to talk about an annual breakfast being held next week during the North American International Auto Show. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I want to leap in. How does Matt supposed to spell Walmart? I heard a story about that. I thought I'd start with that.
I think we'll let some things just remain secret.
Well, see, they did finally take the dash out, so I'm in the clear now. So.
All right, so let's talk about your breakfast coming up. It's quite a lineup you have there. It's Friday morning. I know it's sold out, but I think there's a wait list, right?
We are working on a wait list. We are seeing how many more chairs and tables we can get into the ballroom at the Detroit Marriott. We're very excited about it. We're over 1,000 people, and we are highlighting artificial intelligence and its applications in the automotive industry.
Yeah, we just talked about that. We had Dan Lohrmann on in the previous segment talking about threats from cybersecurity and AI and that sort of thing. So I suppose, is that going to be what part of the discussion, too? Are you going to talk about how to keep the bad guys out of AI or not?
I'm sure that will come up as a question and will be something that we'll talk about. What we're aiming for is to help the audience have a better understanding of what's happening in automotive AI. And I think most of us, me included, think about it mostly in terms of autonomous vehicles. But there's a lot of other research going on in other applications that are less familiar to the rest of us. So I think we'll hear about that as well.
So talk about your panel a little bit. Who do you have speaking at this event?
We have Ken Washington, who is Vice President of Research and Advanced Engineering and Chief Technology Officer for Ford. We have Allison Malik, who is the Chief Operating Officer and co-founder of May Mobility. And that's the company that's had the autonomous vehicles and a pilot project in downtown Detroit. And then we have Jason Mars, who is founder and CEO of a company called Clink, which does conversational artificial intelligence. He's worked mainly with the finance industry so far, but he is starting to branch out in who his customers are as well. And then Carla Bailo, who's president and CEO of the Center for Automotive Research, will moderate. Mm.
Well, I've heard 2 out of 4 of those people speak before, and they were both terrific. I've heard Carla and I've heard Allison speak at various events over the years, and it sounds like a really interesting panel. Talk a little bit also, I wanted to ask you, besides this event, first of all, is there a place where you can go and sign up for the waiting list?
Well, you can go to our website, informmichigan.org. Odds are small at this stage, I would say. Mm-hmm. So But if you want to give it a try, would go there and click on this event from the webpage.
Well, I happened to see something today as well about Inforum that I wanted to ask you about. You're doing a networking program at the Consumer Electronics Show this Friday, I see, that you're doing with Denso, the auto supplier. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, and we're doing that on Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesday, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's from Wednesday from 4 to 6, and we're co-hosting it with Denso, so it'll be in Denso's space, which is in the North Hall. We're really excited about this. We've never been before, and Denso was had this terrific idea that we should highlight diversity in automotive at the Consumer Electronics Show. And the show has had its critics, you know, based on lack of diversity at the show. So we think that this is really a good opportunity. If, you know, any of your listeners are going to be at the show and they'd like to stop by and see us, it's in the North Hall.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Inforum. Now, we had previous, before she jumped ship on you and went to the Detroit Venture Partners, we had Tim Bruché on every month. So let's talk a little bit about Inforum in general. This may be the first time folks have heard that. Maybe they just think of it as the Women's Economic Group or something like that. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what Inforum is and does?
Sure. We're a nonprofit that was formed in 1962 by 23 women who worked in business and could not join business associations or attend their meetings because they were restricted to men. Huh. Obviously, a lot of things have changed since then, but we still believe very strongly in the importance of strategic networks for women. We rebranded as Inforum about a dozen years ago, and beyond our original, programming of lunches anchored by speakers, we offer leadership development programming. We have an entrepreneurial program called Engage that assists women entrepreneurs. So we're pretty diversified at this point.
All right. And are you recruiting now someone to take over the Engage program, or is that being done by someone in-house at this point?
We have a brand new person, Olga Alavino, who was a senior vice president at Yazaki North America. Retired from Yazaki and had been doing some volunteering and had decided that she wanted to go into nonprofit management. And so we were fortunate enough to hire Olga, and she's new on board.
Well, good. I'm glad to see that program is still continuing on.
It is. It is. We've had such good results from the program, and we're so proud of the progress that the women who've gone through the program have made. And, of course, their successes are their successes, but we're very happy to have assisted.
Now, I went on your website this morning to pull up the information about your 17th annual NAIAS Breakfast, a.k.a. the Detroit Auto Show. I use that acronym, and some people go, what is NAIAS? And I go, just call it the Detroit Auto Show. Anyway, and I noticed that you have really a lot of events going on all the time. It took me like page 2 of your website to get to an event that's next Friday. So you have a lot of things happening, don't you?
Yes, we do. And we have our very large signature events like the Auto Show Breakfast, which are less frequent, but we have affinity groups, which are member events run by members that happen on a regular basis. It's a way in which members can connect in informal settings and learn some things. We do learning labs, which are two-hour seminars that are learning opportunities on various topics. And we have industry groups around automotive, technology, healthcare, and manufacturing. And we'll be launching a group around business-to-business finance in the spring.
Wow, amazing.
And what's the current membership, Cindy?
We have 3,000 members and 10,000 friends, which are not Facebook friends, but they're people who are affiliated with our organization in one way or another.
And in physical locations, you also have West Michigan. I think you have something going on in Grand Rapids, right?
Yes, our members are divided between Southeast Michigan and West Michigan. Our office locally is in the Renaissance Center. We're fortunate enough to have donated space from General Motors.
Oh, nice.
All right. And I see you also doing an event for International Women's Day.
Yes, we do that in partnership in Grand Rapids with, you know, with Amway. So that's a result of the planning committee, and we're very much looking forward to that event as well.
Okay. And what's the staffing at Inforum? How, you know, what kind of positions do you have there? You know, what kind of folks do you have working there? I know that there, you know, obviously you have someone running the Engage program. What else is going on?
Well, we have we are a small but mighty team of nine, plus we have a part-time CFO, we have, and most of us manage many things. So anyway, that's the beauty of a small organization. You get to learn a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how long have you been with Inforum now?
I've been with Inforum for 2.5 years.
Oh, okay. And obviously you've got an extensive background in journalism. Talk about that a little bit. What's your, I know you're in charge of communications there. There's a reason for that.
Yes, I'm in charge of communications. Most of what I do though is program management.
Okay.
I have broad oversight over our events. I oversee our automotive next group. I'll be rolling out our finance next group. I work with our in STEM initiative, which places women in STEM professions as volunteers with existing STEM-based programs for K through 16. Children and young adults. I work with our Men as Allies initiative, which are high-level male corporate executives who are interested in building equity in the workplace. So those are some of the highlights.
Well, one of the things I find most interesting about Inforum is the idea of the affinity group that, you have these different affinity groups around different interests and industries. And you also open it up to members that if they can't find one they like, they can start their own. Talk about that a little bit. I just think that's really cool.
Yes, the affinity groups are really the bread and butter membership experience for many. And some of them are tied to time of day. Like we have breakfast groups in Novi and Troy. We have a downtown Detroit lunch group. You know, so they're groups like that. They're groups that are around interest. We have wine lovers. We have two new affinity groups who will be starting soon. One is for women entrepreneurs, which the women who are leading it are calling lady bosses. And we have another new affinity group called Mosaic that will be beginning soon that is for women who are interested in diversity in the workplace.
I saw one for women veterans, too, I thought was pretty interesting.
Yes. We have we do a program called Next for Vets that helps women vets who are in the workplace translate their skills into corporate settings. And so the graduates of that program have started an affinity group and membership for that will likely fan out to include additional women veterans as well.
All right, Cindy, we're under a minute to go, so it's time for you to tell us how to get a hold of Inforum Michigan and for people to get more information.
They can find our website at InforumMichigan.org, and it's Inforum and Michigan, no punctuation in between. Or they can email me at cgoodaker@InforumMichigan.org.
All right. Thanks very much, Cindy Goodacre of Inforum Michigan, the group for women in business and technology. Thanks for being on the show today, Cindy. And we'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to us on PodcastDetroit.com and other purveyors of fine podcasts.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU 5th among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast right here at PodcastDetroit.com.
Yeah, we're waiting for John Robinson to call in from Chicago. He's a venture capitalist. He's helping us being some of my business partners. Oh, is he on the line now? Ah, he's here. Okay, good. John, you there?
Yes, this is John.
There we go.
All right, cool.
I was just starting to talk about you and InnoStar's competition. John, I have not met him face to face yet, but we've exchanged a lot of emails, and he's the sort of the lead organizer for getting all the judges together for a really innovative competition that we're going to have at the second edition of IoT Tech Connect, which will be on April 29th at the Michigan Science Center. And last year we had a pitch contest with Tal Gennison and his group, but this year we're going international. China is going to be bringing in its InnoStars preliminary competition, and it will be 10 Michigan companies that are involved in the IoT, that's the Internet of Things space in some way. And they don't have to be startups. It could be a well-established big company. It doesn't really matter. But the real criteria is it has to be something that the Chinese need and don't already have. Plus, the company also has to have a familiarity with the Chinese market. Right, John?
Yeah, that's correct. So InnoStars is in its third year. It's a Chinese-backed competition. Specifically, it's the Chinese Ministry of Science and Technology, which is in the country for all things science and technology. And they have been looking for years for a more orderly transfer of technology between the U.S. and China. We, of course, all know about some of the anxiety around China and IP theft. So Chinese recognize that. And so they said, well, why don't we do a competition amongst U.S. companies and offer them an opportunity to demonstrate their readiness for the China market. And let's bring the finalists over to China so they can compete in front of Chinese potential partners, investors, and channel partners. And so in its third year, it's proven to be a very successful platform. The companies that compete are entirely U.S. companies. There's no Canadian companies. There's definitely no Chinese companies. This is all about U.S. technology. And the judges are a mix of Chinese that live in the U.S. So for Detroit, the InnoStars competition will have about six Chinese judges that are living in the greater Detroit, and then about five or six Americans who know how to do business in China. And they'll be looking at these companies for readiness. So that's sort of a high-level summary of the competition. The InnoStars has scheduled 9 preliminary competitions around the country: Houston, Seattle, San Francisco, Detroit, Chicago, New York, etc. And in each of those cities, a handful of companies will be extended an invitation to compete in the semifinals and finals in China in October, where there's cash prizes, media recognition, and in-kind support from some Chinese law firms and tax accounting companies that can help them get up and running. In the last 3 years, there's been over 1,000 technology companies competing in this InnoStars, and I think over 300 or so companies have actually received invitations to China to compete in the semifinals. My role is mostly as organizer, making sure that we have the right judges to score the companies on their readiness for China. I've been doing this since the beginning, and I'm really excited for the InnoStars competition in Detroit in late April.
Yeah, absolutely. And as of January 10th, what's today? Later this week, that'd be Thursday, the website's going to open up for folks that think they qualify so they can submit their applications. And they have until April 8th in order to get those applications in. And then John and his team and the folks in China will vet those applicants and then invite the 10 they think that fit the best. Right, John?
That's correct. The technology companies can start competing, I think, from next Monday. They fill out the application online, and there's obviously no cost to compete. You just have to get yourself to the venue to compete on April 29th. We have room for 10 technology companies, so that's going to mean a pretty tight competition. But all in all, InnoStars is really excited to have found the right partners in Detroit. And we know that Michigan is a hub of innovation, especially in IoT. So it should be a really solid event.
So, John, what are you looking for besides innovative technology? What else makes for a winning pitch in this competition?
The companies that have done well in InnoStars in the past have demonstrated that when they hit China, they're ready for takeoff. So it's not we're going to compete at InnoStars to learn about the China market. Companies that do well in the competition and go on to finals and semifinals, they present their technology in a way that demonstrates they understand the needs in the Chinese economy, and they know who their customer is. And if given a chance to win this competition, they will accelerate their deployment in the China market. And they already know who to talk to, where to go, what to do. And that's how you score high. We've still got a few months before InnoStars Detroit. So the companies that are interested, they're certainly welcome to apply now, starting from next Monday. And then in the ramp up to April 29th, they should be doing some research on the China market and try to identify how they would compete in that environment. That's what the judges are looking for. Companies that have PowerPoint slides that say our strategy for China. PowerPoint slides that say our targeted milestones for our first year, and maybe even an example of some of the Chinese companies they've already been in touch with, their partners, to demonstrate a very high level of readiness. And so that's the key to winning this, is demonstrating ready for China, not just that the technology is innovative.
So, John, what's your background in terms of being a China hand yourself?
I lived in China for 7 years, I've been in the China business for about 20 years. So, and a lot of that time has been as a consultant in several different industries, helping international technology companies enter China and succeed in China, mostly on strategy and operational considerations, which is really the two most important things for success in overseas markets. What is your strategy and how are you operationally going to position yourself to succeed? So in the last 10 years, I've mostly been focused on industrial innovation and sustainability. So that's mostly, I guess, what people call clean tech or environmental technologies, but it's mostly around industrial innovation. So you've got your IoT and your AI and your software that has applications in industrial environments. And plus you've got your remediation related technologies, whether it's air, water, soil, or any kind of food and beverage. That's kind of the world I live in. Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, the China market for these technologies is monster.
Absolutely. And you can find more of that information at IoT Tech Connect. That's the name of the website, .com. And we'll have all that information is already posted there. You can also find it at my website, mitechnews.com. And we'll be sharing it widely once we actually have the register URL, but it's not active here for a few more days, but you can check that out. I was going to ask you, John, one of the other hats that you wear is you're also a venture capitalist, so you dabble in that area, right?
Yes. So I'm relatively new to the venture world. I started a fund about a year ago, and we're investing in technology companies. Industrial water and wastewater challenges. So the name of the fund is Evolution Technology Ventures, and we're set up just exactly the way all venture groups are set up. We're raising money from limited partners. We're identifying companies that that demonstrate potential, deploying our financial capital, and then at some point exiting those investments, just like all VC does. But we're very targeted on one space in particular, and it's industrial wastewater. So and China becomes a big market for that. So and IoT becomes an important part of monitoring industrial process water, feed water, and wastewater. So whether you're manufacturing glass, beer, or some automotive components, if there's wastewater involved, monitoring that wastewater becomes an important investment, and that means IoT. So we're looking at this competition from that angle, but Detroit's the world home of automotive, and so we're expecting a lot of technologies that are mobility related. So the competition is not favoring technologies one way or another. It just has to satisfy the requirement of being IoT related. The end user market is secondary.
Well, we have the mobility stars, folks, here in Detroit. That's Ted. Was that Ted Kerbinski? How's Serbinski, right? Matt, looking at you here.
Yes.
Help me out here.
Okay, yeah, yep.
So anyway, so they recruit auto-related, mobility-related startups from around the country. So there's a fertile core there, so we'll make sure that they're aware of what's going on. I don't know how many of them would be China-ready, but they would certainly be that automotive mobility segment that I know the Chinese are looking at as well. So that would be a nice pond to fish in, I think, for us. But then there's also a lot of Israeli companies that are here in Detroit doing anti-car hacking, things like that. I don't know whether that would be something the Chinese would be interested in, do you think?
There's a market for pretty much everything in China. So, yes, the Chinese are interested in security-related technologies for auto. Remote monitoring. Yeah, I mean, anything that has a market in the U.S. has a market in China. Attacking that market and winning in that market requires some specialized leadership. And for companies that feel like they've got the ability to go into China and successfully compete, InnoStars becomes an accelerator of sorts to demonstrate to the Chinese market that they're winners, and they're ready for action in China. So I would encourage any company that solves a problem leveraging IoT compete, whether it's mobility or other fields.
And in terms of judges, there may be some judges, and of course I'm going to put this this audio podcast on the website. So for anybody that thinks they want to judge this competition, what are you looking for in judges?
The key determinant of a judge is, do they have the ability to understand and succeed in China? They don't have to have subject matter expertise necessarily in the technology. They have to have subject matter expertise in entering China and scaling up a business in China. So it's more around the business side of the company than it is the science and engineering. So the judges that will be judging these companies will all be familiar with the China and how to grow a company in China. And as I mentioned in my opening remarks, some of the judges will be of Chinese heritage, and some of the Chinese judges will be of non-Chinese heritage that have lived and worked in China or done business in China for many years. And they're able to separate which companies really are ready and which companies maybe need a bit more time to figure out how to go after China.
We've got just a few minutes left. Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about the IoT Tech Connect event, seeing as how this competition is part of that event and this is your event.
Yes, so. Absolutely. Second go around, we learned a lot from last April on what not to do, and so hopefully we're a lot smarter about that. But we also changed the venue. We're at the Michigan Science Center, and they've been very helpful with this. I think it's going to be a great event, and being in downtown Detroit, I think we'll have a much bigger audience. We had about 300 attend in April of last year. We're anticipating 500 to 1,000 or so for this one, because in the morning it's starts off with Lawrence Burns, who's the former R&D director for General Motors, is going to be our morning keynote.
Just that little company.
Okay. Yeah, a little company.
Yeah.
And then in between, we're going to have all these different sessions for connected and autonomous vehicles, for cybersecurity, for AI and blockchain and all these other things, sensors, all the stuff that's related to IoT. A lot of people know this is coming, know they need to deal with it. They just don't understand it. And that's what this is really about. And only $90 for the ticket. That includes the morning breakfast, the lunch, the afternoon cookies, all that jazz. And then this event will be at the end of it. And then right after this event, we're having a big VIP reception so all the ticket holders can rub elbows with everybody that was a sponsor or a speaker or whatever. So it's a great event for you to exchange business cards, meet the right people, and certainly learn a lot more about the Internet of Things, or as some people are now calling it, the Internet of Everything, right?
Okay. So save that date, April 29th. The venue is the Michigan Science Center. The event is IoT Tech Connect.
Dot
I would
com.
Imagine your website will be going up sooner.
Oh, it's already up. Yes.
IoTTechConnect.com. There you go. Well, thank you, John Robinson of the China InnoStars Pitch Competition. Want to thank you for being on the show today. Want to thank all of our guests today. Besides John Robinson, we had Cindy Goodacre, Vice President of Signature Programs and Communications with Inforum, cybersecurity expert Dan Lerman, and we kicked off the show with Michelle Krebs, Executive Analyst for Autotrader.com. We will be off next week. Both Mike and I will be attending the North American International Auto Show. So we will talk to you again on Monday, January 21st at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.